Welcome to the Hustle Unlimited podcast, where our mission is to inspire greatness in people who are chasing their dreams. We'll give you access to entrepreneurs and business leaders who will give you the fuel to chase the dreams that you have. All of our guests want to give back to the next generation of leaders by sharing the details of their journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. Please welcome our host for Hustle Unlimited, Donald Thompson, and this week's guest, Patrice Andrews. Patrice is the chief of police for the town of Morrisville, North Carolina.
Hello, my name is Donald Thompson, and I'm here with Hustle Unlimited. And before we get started, I want to just give kind of the ground rules for today and anytime you listen to our podcast. Number one, all dreamers are allowed. Number two, we're looking to give you guys information, guidance, and motivation to take that leap of faith to chase the dreams and goals that you have. Anything we can do or say to promote that in a positive way means that we've achieved what we wanted and the reason that we did this podcast. And without that, with anything further, I'm going to introduce Patrice Andrews. And a fast friend and chief of police in Morrisville, North Carolina.
Yes. Not to be confused with Mooresville.
And so if you wouldn't mind, take just a minute and give a little bit about your background. Mm-hmm. Where are you from? Mm-hmm. What brought you to North Carolina? That kind of thing. And then we'll chat for a little
bit. Okay. All right. Well, wow. Well, thank you. I'm very excited to be here. About me, I'm just a simple girl, you know. I grew up, was born in Raleigh, stayed in Raleigh for just a little smidge period of time, moved to Chapel Hill, was raised in Chapel Hill, north side part of Chapel Hill, which was predominantly African American. And I say back in the day, but during that time, it's predominantly African American, but now it's just kind of a diverse cultural melting pot, if you will. Went to Chapel Hill High School, graduated from Chapel Hill High School in 1991, and I originally wanted to be a marine biologist.
Okay.
Yeah. That doesn't always happen. You know, that's life lesson number one. Yeah. What you want to do isn't always what ends up happening.
That's right.
Right? There's a path for you. There's one that you've envisioned, but then there's one, you know, I'm very rooted in my faith, and I believe that there is a path that was destined and determined for you when you were created. That he determined for you. So that's the chapter in my story. You know, I went to Hampton University, did very well at Hampton University, got very homesick, realized that you have to be great at biology in order to do anything related to marine biology.
Gotcha.
And that wasn't me. I just wanted to swim with fish and, you know, and be in the water, but that just wasn't me. And so I was homesick. Both of my parents are from Chapel Hill. My mother is from the foothills of North Carolina, Wilkesboro. We call that God's country.
Okay.
And my father is from the Bull City, from Hickstown.
All right.
And so I wanted to come home and came home to North Carolina Central University, transferred, and decided, I thought, you know, well, I learned that for me at that time, bad lesson. School is not an option. That going to class is not an option. I thought it was an option for me. I chose not to go to class.
I'm sure some of our folks can relate to listening to us.
Yes. And I'm kind of giving you the Cliff Notes story of kind of my life and how I came to be in sitting before you today. But class was just not an option for me. I didn't feel like going. I fell in love, got booed up. I don't even know if that's the term anymore, but anyway,
well, that's lit.
I'm just saying, this is what happened. So, failed out of school. North Carolina Central University said, kick rocks, basically, you got to go. I became a single parent very early on.
Gotcha.
Was on government assistance, WIC, you name it. It was about survival for me.
Gotcha.
One day I was at work and said to myself, I cannot do 9 to 5, clock in, literally clock out. I need benefits. I need something greater for my daughter and myself.
Awesome.
And opened the newspaper when it was actually paper. Yes, paper. and it said Durham Police Department hiring. And it was, I thought, whoo, this is great. So I started going down the list of everything. Okay, let's talk about salary. $23,472. I was going to be rich. I knew I was going to be wealthy. Yes. So, you know, and then benefits.
Yep.
Ooh, benefits, you know. And because my ultimate goal was was really, at this point, it was baby steps for me, was sure. was kind of coming off of government assistance. You know, I wanted to do something just for my daughter, right? Okay. A little bit more. So anyway, so put in the application, Durham, those crazy people, they hired me and I entered the academy, Durham Police Department.
That's
Police
awesome.
Academy, yes. And so my background, I've held positions in just about every division and department within the city of Durham Police Department. My last assignment was as a commander over Criminal Investigations Division.
Gotcha.
So I commanded about 80 officers over homicide, special victims unit, special victims unit, homicide, fraud, and domestic violence unit.
Wow.
Yeah. And
that's some heavy stuff.
That's heavy stuff, right? You have a whole, like you have crimes that you track by paper, and then you have the violent, the really violent, and then the really the victimization,
yeah.
the whole gamut of victimization. I was at last 2 years while I was at Durham Police Department, I was responding out to every single homicide. So you can imagine
yeah.
that getting there and seeing the violence that human beings can inflict on each other, it will wear you down. It
That's
will
right.
wear you down and wear you out. And then you really start to question, okay, what am I really here to do? I ended up applying to the Morrisville Police Department as their police chief.
That's awesome.
I was at the FBI National Academy during that time and made my transition as the Morrisville Police Chief in June of 2016. And that's currently where I am now.
Well, fantastic. And thanks for bringing us up to date.
No,
you did great, right? Because
yeah.
that's a quick synopsis. I want to
yes.
key on a couple of things in the brief part of your story. Public assistance,
mm-hmm.
single mom.
Mm-hmm.
These are statistics to where a lot of people can easily give up. Why didn't you?
Mm.
Why didn't you look at those statistics, look at those odds, and keep going?
It was not easy, but you know, my foundation in what I believe in is beating the odds. I always believe that in life you should strive to be the outlier, because when you're the outlier, you know, there's innovation. You become more innovative. You can see beyond kind of what's in the square room, right, and see different. I'm not trying to sound like a cornball, but I see life in as color. You know, it's vivid and it should be valued. And while we see red in the chairs, there's a different story to that color.
That's right.
So, you know, for me, that's what kept me going, that I wanted to provide more. I wanted my daughter who, you know, she just wanted pigtails that were even, you know, I mean, I wanted her to be proud of her mommy. I wanted my parents to be proud of me, because I will tell you, I made a commitment that I was never going back home. Not because my mom and dad would not have me, but I didn't want to be a burden. I wanted to be successful. I wanted them to be proud, you know, of me. And ironically enough, they never knew what I was going through until WREL, until we did the interview with Lena Tillett.
Wow.
They never knew. They never knew about my victimization. They never knew about, you know, me being on welfare and on WIC. And they never knew. Never knew about it. And I told them, one of the things that I told them, I said, you guys raised me to stand on your own 2 feet and to survive, right? And to never question my path. And that's, I really kind of applied that back, and it is doable. And I think when we were talking,
yeah.
I said, before we came on, I said that if it was easy, everybody would do it.
That's right.
You know, if life was easy, if these journeys were easy, everybody would do it. You wouldn't learn a thing, and
That's
you
right.
would have no knowledge to pass on to somebody else.
That's right.
Right.
One of the things I found in success in life, business as a parent, and we've all had failures and things to overcome, but your current circumstance is not your destiny.
Yeah.
And so many people listen to the voice that puts them down versus the voice that lifts them up.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I would ask you, as I was reading a little bit about your background and mm-hmm. some of the things, tell me a little bit about, switch to career a little bit, and tell me a little bit about the FBI training,
mm.
right? The time you spent getting that additional
yeah.
education to really prepare you for leadership
mm-hmm.
In law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that was it. That was an intensive. So it's a 10-week executive course that's actually at Quantico.
Which you see on the TV.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm like, whoa, there's some bricks there. I recognize those bricks. I mean, the building, and you know, of course,
sure.
It's interesting because you're also, while you're at the FBI National Academy, you're also there with the agents that are in training.
Gotcha.
So you're walking the same halls with them, which is really cool, right? And you're seeing, man, I remember when I was 20-something years old, you know?
Right.
But it was interesting because you have police, law enforcement executives that come from this entire beautiful world of ours, that come from all walks of life. You know, some of my brothers and sisters that I've met and that are from Australia and you know, Japan and Africa, and these are bonds and relationships that you form. Their perspective on women in policing, right, can be a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize because they look through a different lens. So it's not necessarily wrong, it's just not...
It's different.
It's different,
yeah.
Right? And so in that is kind of the opportunity, you know, to sit down and have those conversations, those critical conversations about women in policing, about minorities in policing,
yep.
Minorities and women in our world.
That's,
you know,
right.
and in roles as decision makers and
leaders.
Executives,
yeah,
leaders,
right.
and then even, you know, I'll tell my staff all the time, you don't have to have, you know, the brass on your collar. You don't have to have that title to be a leader, because anybody can be a supervisor, right? I can get you to do what I want you to do because I'm your supervisor, but a true leader, you know, will, without even saying it, you know, you inspire people, or you want, and you also learn, right? A true leader will say, show me how to do that.
That's
just
right.
Like when we were getting ready for this,
yep.
You know, I love how you just like, listen, I just tell me what you need from me.
That's right.
I got this. You guys know what y'all, I'm here to learn. Tell me what you need.
That's right.
To make it successful.
No, that's really, really powerful. I think I'll seize on one thing and extend it. A lot of times people think leadership is just positional, but you can lead from whatever level you are in the organization, and you can always be a good example. And when you're trying to achieve, a lot of times, and I hear this when people say, well, how do I be a CEO?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to do to own my own business?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing it gets people off guard is you need to be productive where you are.
Yes.
A lot of people are always wanting to know, what do I need to do to take the next step? But they need to be excellent in the job that they're fulfilling today.
Mm-hmm.
Because excellence is the transferable leadership skill,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
once you're a good example,
mm-hmm.
other people start to ask more of you.
Yes.
Once people start to ask more of you,
mm-hmm.
that's where then it's opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is where we found. Let me ask this. And a lot in our society today in terms of law enforcement is not positive.
Mm-hmm.
There's a perception mm-hmm. of us versus them.
Yes.
As an African-American male, there is a perception that I should be afraid of the police.
Right.
That young people coming up see this imagery. What would you do or say that can educate people to think differently,
mm-hmm.
to understand a little bit different flavor of those that wear the uniform
mm-hmm.
and are chartered with really protecting us?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will tell you this. One of the things that I've always said is that uniform and that badge, that's not who I am. I am Mom. You know, that's who, when my daughter calls me Mom, you know, my son, Mom, stop. You know, that's who I am first. I am a wife. I am a Black woman that happens to be a police chief, a police officer.
That's powerful.
Right? So I'm affected in that order.
Gotcha.
In my job. Right. And so that's what I would say first is really it's how we on both sides. So with our community, with law enforcement, it's really about, you know, creating that opportunity that we can step in each other's shoes and actually see a different side to each other.
Yep.
You know, I think that's really important. I think familiarity is extremely important. One of the things I'll tell my officers all of the time is, you know, get to know not just, you know, the parts of the community you're comfortable with. So that's not right. just your, you know, your the residents that are white or the residents that are Indian, but you know you have a small pocket in the Shiloh community in Morrisville. Right, that is a tremendously historic community because it was founded by freed slaves.
Got it.
And I said, and you need to get to know them. You need to get to know that population because guess what? They are you. They are your community. They and you are their community. You know, really taking that step and offering those pushes because guess what? In law enforcement, we have not done it right.
Gotcha.
And owning that if you're walking and you're breathing, you have bias. Is what you do with that.
That's pretty powerful. When as a business leader, you have to own responsibility for the outcome. And mm-hmm. what you just described is that there's some responsibility that law enforcement has, and then there's a responsibility for us as citizens to realize, wait a minute, just like you said, mm-hmm. the uniform is not the person,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? That
right.
we all are responsible for the environment that we kind of create mm-hmm, together, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. Tell me a story of, as you've gone through law enforcement, that, how would I want to phrase this? Something that would just be surprising to me, oh. right? Just tell me an interesting story that would be surprising.
Oh, gosh. Lord have mercy. Okay. As I've gone through in law enforcement, interesting story. I love to dance.
Okay.
So I'll tell you the... And I'm so upbeat. So I don't care if I have a uniform on or not. You know, when we go to events, I've participated in the Pratham, which is an organization that raises money and awareness about the global illiteracy rate.
Okay.
Right? And so they asked me 2 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, to participate in their dancing with the celebrity stars. And, you know, I'm like, okay.
Got it.
You're asking me? Okay, fine. You know, I love to dance. And so it is, there's nothing, you know, we were up there dancing and I had
that's
the
cool.
best time. You know, I am that, but that's a part of me that, yes, I might have that badge on, but I'll jump up there with you and dance. You know, I love to live life. You know, love to live life. As far as stories, you know, there aren't a whole lot of shiny stories in law enforcement. There are stories that have, you know, just really rocked me to my core, you know, that have given me, in a sense, an opportunity to learn a lesson, right? And I'll tell you, at the DNC, at the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, when it was held in Charlotte in 2012, there were... you know, officers from all sorts of agencies that converged on Charlotte to assist. And this was about the time, you know, just really the awareness, because quite frankly, police brutality has always been there.
That's right.
Okay.
There's just more video.
The images are that's more right. accessible and you feel like you could touch them because they're right there.
Got it.
And it's a reality. So this was still around during that time. So, you know, there were protesters down there and just the climate was a bit different.
Gotcha.
And I remember being at the Coliseum and I was night command. So I was commanding about 70 or 80 officers from all different departments. And so one of the officers got on the radio and said, I need for you to come to the delegate bus stop. And as I get there, there's a bus where the delegates were getting on and off, surrounded by people with video cameras. And I look and I see an officer that is berating the driver of this bus, older black man. He was in his 80s.
Gotcha.
And she was standing, she's white female, and she was standing over him, just berating him, right? Just yelling at him, completely disrespectful. So I get on the bus and I separate her from him. And now he's at a, to me, I consider a very submissive level because he's sitting down and she's standing over him.
Gotcha.
Right? And I ask him, I said, so what happened? And he stands up because he's getting ready to tell me a story, right? He's telling me what's going on. Well, she just goes into full attack. And, you know, grabs him by his collar, this poor man, and in trying to keep himself from falling back, he grabs her arms. She looks at that as an attack, and so she starts kicking, and so I step in between them, and she launches a nice solid kick at me and starts, like, she's gonna come at me, and so I shove her back and I send her off the bus. Come to find out, this young lady had deeper issues.
Gotcha.
Right? And this man was driving the bus, had been a bus driver for the Charlotte Hornets, had all this, you know, he was driving the delegates, and she basically didn't like the fact that he disobeyed, in her mind, a command to not to park where he was letting off the delegates. But I tell that story to say this was one of the first times that I ever really understood that as law enforcement, right, we have a job to check each other and not allow that brutality to go on. You know, we have a job to protect the innocent against the oppressor. You know, we have that job. And so I viewed her as, and not all, let's be clear before any of my law enforcement friends start becoming all upset with me.
Right.
I'm not saying that all law enforcement is bad. It's like not all attorneys are bad.
That's
not
right.
Not all dogs are bad. Not all builders are bad.
That's
you
right.
know, so it's, I'm not generalizing, but we have to be very open and honest with ourselves and understanding that it's the good law enforcement officers have a responsibility to protect our residents and our citizens, those that we serve. From those officers who wear the badge who are corrupt.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
When I was doing my research, I pulled out a quote, and I think you just expanded
Uh-oh.
On it. No, it's good. The big change we're seeing in policing is that officers are having to switch from the idea of being warriors, going out 100% enforcement all of the time, to more of the guardian mentality, that we are caretakers of the community.
Yes.
And that's really what you described. And what's powerful is, you're living, even right now, this was 2 years ago, I think this was quoted, but that's still top of mind for who you are in the fabric of how you lead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really powerful to share.
Yes.
That two-year-old quote, that's still how you walk.
Yes, absolutely.
Every single day.
Absolutely.
Who are some of your inspirations? Who are some leaders that you admire? Some people, and it doesn't have to be law enforcement.
Yeah.
Just people that you've looked up to that motivated you.
Yeah. So, my parents, both of my parents, my dad, in his own right, he was one of the first to integrate the schools in Durham, and he's the most patient. I thought, man, you know, I remember watching the movie Gandhi very young, right? My parents, so in school, I love reading the Iliad, right, and the Odyssey, my two favorite books.
Okay.
And then I, of course, as an old soul, I'm watching Gandhi, and I thought, I'm like, man, my dad is like Gandhi, you know, he has that patience, that virtuous patience, right? You could spit at him, he's not going to raise a hand, but he's going to pray for your soul.
Right.
Right, he's gonna pray for your soul. So when I'm in, and my mom is that go-getter. She's like, nope, you fall down five times, you better get up the sixth time. You know, she's a tough cookie. You know, and she's a fighter. And so, you know, that great little mix of my parents between the two. I pride myself on, you know, my nest of friends. Right, of good girlfriends that are bosses.
That's awesome.
You know, they may not run their own companies or do, but they, in just their thinking, they are powerful women and forces to be reckoned with. So, you know, I'm very purposeful in who I choose to surround myself with, because you have to be. Because not everybody that's in your circle are there to uplift you and inspire you.
That's right.
Right. And so I look to a lot of people. I'll tell you, my book is full of inspirational people.
The being purposeful and intentional of who you spend time with is a critical life element.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's those that will cheer for you and support you, and then those that are secretly jealous and want to tear you down.
That's it.
And knowing the difference is a critical component to leadership, but also just having a happy life.
Yes.
And we have these, you know, tools and Facebook friends and different things, but you know, I don't have 4,000 friends.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, or whatever.
Exactly.
But I'll take 5 to 10 good ones.
You better believe it.
That 2 o'clock in the morning, you're on the side of the road. They're going to come and help you out.
That's
no
it.
Questions asked.
That's it.
And they're just going to be there.
That's
and
it.
And I think that's really, really important. What do you, I'll ask this question to all my guests. If you had a magic wand, what would you change in today's society? If you had a magic wand.
Whoa.
And some of the answers were cut out or not. So you just speak.
Yeah, I know, right?
And then
I tell you what, I will tell you this. I would change the rhetoric that's going on in our current government. I would make, you know, that's one of the first things I would change, because people look to leadership to inspire and bring out greatness.
Sure.
And when you don't have leadership that inspires and brings out greatness, all sorts of evil finds its way of working itself in,
yep.
Right? And when there's people that are still searching for where they belong, they look to anyone that they can grasp to, regardless of what the lesson is. So I would say, without sounding like, I want world peace. My God, why can't we have world peace?
Right.
Why can't we have world peace? Why can't we have prosperity for everybody? Why can't we have, you know, you've seen the really great graphic, the beautiful picture that talks about equity and equality.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I would change, because, and I would access for everybody. You know, it's interesting. If you look in certain neighborhoods, certain communities that are poor, predominantly African American communities, you have a lot of access to ABC stores, processed foods, right? But where's the farmers markets?
Yep.
Where's the access? Where's the transportation? You know, those are things, I see that. I see that, you know, I see that. And I wish there was just, I wish we could have that equity, right? And I wish everyone could be able to live free, right? It's heartbreaking to me what's going on at our borders, because I subscribe to the belief that regardless of whether or not you were born in this country, you know, you still have rights. You know, your victimization is not any less.
That's right.
As someone that's undocumented or someone not a United States citizen, not any less than someone who is a United States citizen. You are a human being.
That's right.
I think we're taking big steps backwards. I really, really do. I really do. And it saddens me. It really does.
One of the things I would say, and, you know, the folks that I'm having on the podcast, I want to get to know even more. And so I'm super glad that you're here with us. You're making a powerful difference just by your example. And for young people, for young women, for young African American women to watch you succeed is a powerful testimony. Mm-hmm. And we all have that responsibility to lead in our own way. And I agree with you with the rhetoric and the voices.
Yeah.
I subscribe to the fact that most people are good.
Yeah.
I'm going to treat them as such.
That's it.
Until I see strong evidence of ugly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, but
yes.
I'm not going to start out.
No.
With a mindset that the person sitting across from me has a vendetta against me,
right?
Doesn't want to help because I'm African American,
right.
Doesn't want to help because I didn't graduate from college, wants something bad for me,
yes.
Which is most of the time untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times when, you know, I counsel people or mentor people that want to go forward, I spend a lot of time on what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And the next question is, what would you encourage people to do and think when they're not necessarily have that perfect pedigree, like yourself, and they're on the way to kind of moving up the ladder of success, what are some of the pieces of advice you would give to somebody, let's say your 20-year-old self?
Yes.
Right,
yes,
years ago.
Yes. Oh, stay in school.
Yeah.
Don't get booed up. Oh, but seriously, yes. Yeah. So I would say, and then I have a story.
Yeah.
Know your worth, and then add tax. You know your worth and add tax. Never be afraid to take a leap of faith. Because we all want to be great, right? We all want to succeed. Whether it's your success is measured by, you know, who you supervise or how big your house is or what kind of car, however you measure success, right? We all want that acceptance. We all want something that says, man, I've arrived.
That's right.
I would say your competition is yourself.
I can believe that.
You cannot compete with people that are not you, right? When you start to measure your success by everyone around you, you lose sight of the good ingredients within yourself.
That's right.
That will catapult you to your own success.
That's right.
Right? I'll never forget, was at North Carolina Central University and Eagle Pride and former First Lady Michelle Obama was, you know, it was 2012 election time, and she was campaigning, and she is a magnificent woman. I mean, she has got it all, right? And so there were some folks around, and I was there working. I was with the former chief of police for Durham, Jose Lopez, okay. And I was his executive officer.
Gotcha.
And so Secret Service, some of the presidential detail, I knew some of those men and women, and they were there, and we were kind of in the green room, and the, you know, and then she, First Lady Obama, she shows up. And I stood back, because if you don't have clearance to be that, because she was doing photo opportunity. So, but if you don't have clearance, no matter who you know in Secret Service, you just don't get close. You know, you keep your, until you're,
know your
you've
lane.
Got, know your lane. Know your lane. You know, and so I was standing to the side and she's taking pictures and I'm just speechless. Like I could have died right there and just been happy to have been in her presence. She looks over at me and she says, come over here. And I thought, I told her, I said, I can't. I can't, because your folks going to jump on me.
Right.
I can't. And she says, come over here. And so I go, okay, feet, start walking, left, right, right? This is, the First Lady is telling you to come over. So I walk over to her, and I stand close to her, and she puts her arm around me. And she said, let's take a picture. And I put my hand around her waist, which is snatched. Oh. Never compare yourself to other people.
Right.
Yeah. So,
do it quickly.
If so, do it quickly, and that's it. So I put my hand, my arm around her waist, and she said, we're going to take this picture. And I said, okay. So we take the picture. And she, you know, she rubs my back and she leans in my ear and she says, go be great.
That's awesome.
So I would say that no matter where you get to in this world, you can always find a moment to stop someone and to give someone words of inspiration. It doesn't matter what position you hold. You know, my daughter is a teacher in Nashville, Tennessee, and she teaches at a charter school there. Beautiful black and brown kids, right? Our beautiful babies. Oh, my gosh. Underserved community. And she called me, and she was so frustrated. She was like, Mommy, we have kids with some behavioral things, problems going on, and parents don't want to be engaged. And I said, number one, you can't expect every parent to be the way that your father and I, the way we were with you, you know, in your business at school. You can't expect that, right? You can't expect every parent to support you as a teacher. I said, but what you have in your control is the ability for 8 hours a day to tell these kings and queens how great they are. Mm. And she said, you're right. And I told her, never miss an opportunity to tell them how amazing they are. Because that might be the only time anyone tells them how beautiful, how strong, how capable. They're going to grow up to be amazing forces of nature. They're children of God. created in His image. I said, you never miss an opportunity to tell them. And everything else, don't worry about it.
Talk on some of the community things
yes.
that you're involved in, believe in. And then also, I do talk to my guests, just remember, like, how can I help?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, yes. that if, you know, a month from now or a week from now or whatever, if there's something I can be effective, that I want to do it and
yes.
help to.
Absolutely. So I will tell you my, and you know this, is that every year, Boys and Girls Club of Wake County, you know, and really Boys and Girls Club, period. I know so many tremendous men and women that were a part of the Boys and Girls Club growing up,
yep.
that this is really the whole foundation of what the Boys and Girls Club is built upon has changed so many lives, right? And Boys and Girls Club of Wake County, every year we do a back to school shopping event. So we do a virtual shopping event, and we do also an in-store, which you were a part of so tremendously. We do an in-store shopping event, and there is nothing more humbling than bringing in, you know, 20 kids, right? And they rejoice about getting a new backpack.
Yep.
Because I think we sometimes lose sight of the fact that we have so much, and there are so many that have so little.
Yes.
Right? So that is something that every year we do every single year. You know, Habitat for Humanity is huge. I'm really about giving back. Whether it's, you know, giving back in a way that fulfills your community or is more broader reaching. In the Morrisville Police Department, we believe in just being present, showing up, you know, making a kid's day. If we can show up at a birthday party, we do that. You know, I know that's not in the traditional,
right.
I hear that all the time. I'm like, stop with that. You know, we are guardians, and yes, we can be warriors when we need to be. But you know, it's because when you create those relationships down the road, you start to grow a fruitful tree.
That's right.
From that.
We are all responsible to inspire others to give back the blessings we've been given. And you are a caretaker of that responsibility that I admire. And that's really, like, that's really all I'll say. And really, like, the reason that I'm doing this small thing is so that we can reach a bigger audience, right, for some of the superstars next door.
Yes.
That we can really help
yes.
some others. And it's a passion project for me, but it's a passion project that I believe will have a big outcome.
Yes.
And just in the first couple of folks that we've talked to that have really shared in a really, really powerful and authentic way,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like we're leaving the buzzwords and the BS outside
mm-hmm.
the door.
Yeah.
And we're just talking.
Yes.
So that people can really understand and believe that they can have a better way too.
Absolutely.
I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
I appreciate
Thank you.
It so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it very much.
Thank you for joining us on Hustle Unlimited. Make sure to join us each week for more conversations with leaders in our community. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Until next time, make it a great week.